Okay, we're back on as Board of Supervisors.
Okay, we're going to come back in as the Board of Supervisors, KRRC. You guys want to finish up? I apologize, I think you were at your last slide.
Last slide was questions, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. We've completed the formal presentation, so we're
going to open up for questions.
Thank you.
Supervisor Chris.
I'd like to request that Mort and Diane join me at the lectern so that I can field the questions and hand them off to the
They'll take you to San Kitts to sign some papers.
All right, job training, Allie, get in there and run the show here.
I was just going to say, I was going to be like, I have to catch on the go, right?
Good call, Wendy.
Thank you.
Really have to run down the street. All right.
All righty, thank you much.
All right. Supervisor Chris,
All right. Got my notes here. Just some questions. I know there's some concerns. I'm going to be kind of a potpourri here, so skipping around on different stuff. But I know there's some concern with trucks driving into the, getting lost up there, I'll use that, or going down the different roads. Has that been mitigated, maps and those sorts of things? I know it's confusing up there, and then you get GIS and the choice of technology, and they're not always the most friendly things up in that area.
So the answer, we've issued maps and directions to everybody. Kiewit has, and it's in part of it's the Pacific Corps, Fall Creek Hatchery, if we've had issues. They've done the same thing. It still doesn't eliminate that person that unfortunately looks at Google Earth and it directs them up on the far side. I don't know if some additional signage would help, as suggested by the public this morning, right off the bridge, but we're doing everything we can on our side to make sure that they come up the right side of the river, they go onto our project site, so we're trying to get that eliminated.
Mr. Dean was just here. Ms. Davis, would you mind just let us find? We can reach out. Whoever is supposed to, just reach out to Mr. Deeney and see if we need to do more signing on the Kelly side to help people. I know historically, too, there have been a fair number of people that have traveled from Oregon to Cochrane Lake down this old road, thinking it was a smooth road there, so it's historical there as well. And a concern I have with that also is I want to get the word out there as much people as possible. If people are shutting their gates to stop trucks from turning around or those sorts of things, I want to be able to open them back up. The reason for that is we could have a terrible thing like a fire come through and those 5 minutes of trying to get it open and without rehashing the past stories of when that's happened, it just makes it safer for folks. The next question is, you already answered the fire and ambulance coordination. Thank you for that. That was a huge concern for at least my constituents in COPCO was no delays in getting that ambulance up there. As you know, the golden hour in medical care is already a long time to get out there in the first place. So any delays are unnecessary. Would be not to be dramatic, but could be a life factor in that area. So I'm glad you're coordinating with them.
Absolutely.
With the docks, I know we're dealing with $450 million, huge project, but kind of a small win for folks up there that do have the private docks. Some are young bucks, and some people have had a lot of life experience, and so they don't really want to tap that dock back up and those sorts of things. So a small win for those folks would be if this coordination with those landowners to where that can be taken care of in the best way possible, because there's an investment there, and they could either resell or use however they want, but it would be a small win for them if it wasn't on their burden. And then if they didn't have to dispose of it, if KRRC took it, would you guys just dispose of them? Or?
Yeah, that's what we were proposing, Supervisor Chris, that if the owner of the dock does not wish to retain the materials, we'll remove it and dispose of the dock at our expense. Okay. We're concerned about risk and liability and access to private property for those instances where a property owner would like to retain the materials, but I'm willing to do some further exploration on that topic to see if there might be some opportunity to coordinate best.
It would be a good will, a good will as much as possible. It's a stressful time for folks. Signage. And those are some of my, initial questions on that. I'm going to allow for turnaround for the rest of my colleagues to jump in, but those are some of the concerns that we have.
Supervisor Robert?
Can you speak a little bit about the pipeline for the Wairika water system?
Yeah, by all means. The current City of Wairika pipeline lies on the base of Iron Gate Reservoir, and it's post-dam removal, that pipeline would be subject to the forces of a flowing river, which is not currently. So we've been working closely with the City of Wairika Public Works Department, Council, Mayor, since 2017 for purposes of designing and implementing a solution that works well for the City of Wairika and ensures continuity in their water supply. So it involves relocating the water line, which will be suspended from the new Daggett Bridge. And that process will get started. We've completed some of the biological and cultural surveys as part of the work to improve the Daggett Bridge. And we'll get in and begin the construction and relocation of that water line this year. We'll notify the city of temporary outage when we need to do the crossover from the existing line to the new line. Public Works staff in the City of Wairika will be on site to conduct construction inspection and related work. The new line will be tested and approved by the city before it's brought on online. So we continue to do close coordination with the City of Wairika for that relocation and replacement. Does that fully address your questions?
So far, are there any permits or anything required from the county for the bridge that that are required for that part of the process?
I think the answer is no. We've obtained all of the necessary authorizations for the bridge within the FERC jurisdictional boundary.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Not yet.
Supervisor Cutler?
A couple things. The Fall Creek, I think I heard the word culvert installed for returning salmon, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So Siskiyou County's been part of, I want to call it, I think it was the five COPO, five counties that were removing culverts and replacing them with bridges for returning spawners. Why are we using a culvert when this county has been a proponent for bridges instead of culverts?
This is actually an open bottom. It's really an arch culvert. For that particular site, that was what was selected, fit the site, but we went through the whole process with NOAA Fisheries and CDFW. There's actually an open rubble bottom on it, natural system, and then a big arch culvert that goes across it. And we went through the evaluation on bridge versus culvert. The culvert's picked because of the site and then the size that we're putting in. So I wasn't involved in that original decision. I can get more information on that for you, but I do know they did look at both of those. But what you'll see is that it's an arch culvert, but it's a natural bottom system that goes up through it to reflect the stream.
Okay, thank you. And you're getting, I think I heard you say it, but I think you called it a tunnel. I'll call it a bypass test on, I think it's Iron Gate that you're getting ready to do. Is that correct? Like the head gate?
Yeah, so Iron Gate Tunnel, as you know, it's been there when they originally built the dam back in the 60s. And it's got basically an intake that's still out in the Fore Bay. And it's got about halfway down a gatehouse, and it's got a gate there. That gate is the emergency low-level outlet for the dam in the event if they lost the penstock to the powerhouse or the head gate shut. That gate automatically opens to maintain flow into Klamath River. So it's already set up, it's operational. What we're doing is going in, and we're basically going to isolate it. There's what's called a blind flange on the downstream side of that. We were able to basically water up that gate. We're just going to run it through cycles, make sure everything is working the way we want it to, do some upgrades. Because we're going to open it all the way. It only opens up partially now to meet that minimum flow below Klamath in the event that that powerhouse goes offline. So that's what we're doing, is going in and doing that. And then we're doing, putting what's called super cavitation baffles on the existing concrete outlet that's there, that's part dish downstream from the gate. And that's for energy dissipation when we release the flows during drawdown. And then we're putting an additional vent line in to be able to basically vent that hydraulic jump that occurs. So that's the modifications we're doing.
So I'm just going to be, I guess, hypothetical here. So if the valve fails or you can't close it again, is there a mitigation or what could be the ultimate, I guess, consequence of that?
So when we open it, we don't intend to close it again.
You don't? Okay.
No, it's open and we're done. So basically, it is going to be open until the dam's out, volitional passage is restored. Then what we do is the channel is moved back into the main channel, the dam's gone, and then we put permanent closures on the intake side that's currently out in the reservoir, and then we put permanent closures on the outlet that you can see down there by the adult collection facility. So once we're open, that's it, we're done. We don't close it.
Okay. With regard to, more of the KRRC, financial disclosures, profit and loss statements, balance sheet, is any of that available to the public?
Yeah, on an annual basis, the Renewal Corporation is required to file a 990 form, and I've reviewed the 990 for the previous fiscal year, and I believe it's been filed or will be filed, and the 990s are full financial disclosure for the Renewal Corporation available to the public.
And are they available on your website?
I'll check, Supervisor Kopsef, to see whether those are being posted on our website. I don't know the answer to that.
Because I think you have to keep something on site for the public to be able to view. It's not the full 990, but I think there's a partial part of it that is required.
I'll confirm whether those are posted or otherwise available and report back to the board.
Thank you. And then you've heard the concerns from residents. County didn't ask for this. It's happening. But the whole concern the county's had is to make residents whole and the county whole, because this isn't something that we just said, yeah, we've got to do it. We've heard from residents these limitations on the mitigation fund. It's not sounding good. And what can KRRC do to help influence that? Because obviously these people that are being affected, it's more or less, I'll call it private property, even as far as the docks. There was an investment in that, and just to have it called off, isn't making them whole. So what's your view on that? And, communication factor has been very poor. So how can you help?
Yeah, I appreciate that comment, Supervisor Kopsef, and the comments from the public that we've heard this morning. The Renewal Corporation has been clear that the fund is independent. The fund has been clear that the Renewal Corporation doesn't speak for the fund. The fund speaks for itself, but there is a bridge between the two entities, and what I'm committed to doing is reporting back to the fund administrators that it appears that there are opportunities for enhanced communication. I think you hit on it, that there has been a little bit of a rough start on some of the communication, and I think there's room for improvement there, and I'll share that message with the administrators and see if there can't be some
follow-up. Was the mitigation funded by KRRC?
Yeah, the funding.
So it's public dollars. So where I'm getting, a bit frustrated is that it should have some transparency, which it doesn't have. It should have a communication factor, which it doesn't have.
Well, I would say that the fund administrators are being entirely transparent with the property owners.
That's not what we're hearing.
Well, if the property owners have further questions, the fund administrators have been clear, as I understand it, that they will address any question that they receive. The KRC has assured the fund administrators, and we have followed through on this because we have had questions, that the Renewal Corporation will provide the fund access to legal and technical resources so that any questions that are forthcoming to the fund can be fully and satisfactorily addressed as they relate to the direct project impacts to private property owners. So the fund administrators, as I understand it, have been completely transparent with private property owners. That is the intended audience. That is the intended group that the fund administrators are working closely with for purposes of this claims process and these settlements that are being done.
But we're not hearing that.
Well, we're not. We as a board are not privy to any fund balance that is public money that's coming into that fund. And we've asked for it.
Yeah. Again, I'm happy to go back to the fund administrator and share the concerns about the communication.
Could you at least I feel that this board's position is that the property owners have to be made whole. They didn't ask for this as a consequence of what a decision has been made, and they can't be out anything. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, sir.
No, well, and I, you know, early on in meetings that we had, and I think Elizabeth Nielsen was with us and Natalie Reed, and I think at the time maybe Supervisor Nixon in Sacramento, representatives for KRC made it known to the county that we brought up, what if you run out of money? And it was made known to us that that would not be a problem, that there was plenty of support from private entities that would help buffer whatever overrun of costs could occur. And I would hope that the mitigation fund would not be a shortfall for what there may not be enough funding for to complete your project. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Mr. Howell?
Sure. Getting back to the, maybe not the fund so much, but the more global personal impacts to property, what entity is legally on the hook for someone to take legal action against? For lost compensation? For property loss?
The Renewal Corporation in the state of Oregon and the state of California are the co-licensees for the Lower Tama project, responsible for the implementation of FERC's order. So those are the entities that are ultimately responsible with for complying with laws and regulations and permit terms and conditions and other authorizations. Presumably those entities would also be an entity that a private property owner would petition to for, you know, for consideration of impacts. And that's the explicit purpose of the mitigation fund, is to address those.
Well, let's get outside that and talk about the mitigation fund, because what my concern is that the mitigation fund for a well replacement, constituents are being asked to sign a waiver of any future liability for $5,000. $5,000 doesn't even get the well driller out to inspect the property. You know, a typical well in this county is running $35,000 for a domestic well. They didn't ask to have their well replaced. We believe we never read all the thing about, well, they're getting a new well so that they should have some skin in the game. And baloney, we didn't need a new well. On the structural integrity piece, for some homes, it's capped at 17 grand. So that's why I'm asking the question of who will these people go after when those dollar amounts are exceeded, which they will.
Again, Supervisor Kopp, the Renewal Corporation is the co-licensee for the project. So ultimately, the Renewal Corporation has responsibility to comply with FERC's order, and so I don't know. That would, you know, that's the best answer I have to the question as to who a private property owner would consider to be the responsible entity.
Okay. Next question I have is, you're doing a lot of earth work right now, ground disturbing activity. How many tribal monitors do you have in place in Florida?
Yeah, so there, we basically have, there are two minimum AECOM monitors, and then there are anywhere from two to four tribal monitors on site, depending on how much activity we've got going on. I don't know exactly how many on any given day, it varies.
And what tribe are they? So
Shasta Nation and
Planet, I believe. Yeah. I'd like the Shasta Nation contact.
Shasta
as well.
Shasta Indian Nation, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Is that through Janus Crow?
Yeah, we've been, the Renewal Corporation has a direct contract with the Shasta Indian Nation to provide archaeological technicians and
monitors who are performing the monitoring services.
I bring it up.
Through the tribal.
So I bring it up because you all know there are four divisions in that tribe, and the current sites that you're disturbing are not associated with the Deep Valley family that you have a contract with. And I'm getting complaints from the tribal members who actually have the sites recorded as part of their family.
We're aware that there are intertribal consideration of ownership of various sites. We're happy to talk to anybody that you might like to refer to us.
I'll let them know because, the sites are recorded by family, and some are more important to others, depending where you are geographically in this county. What is the proposed flow height in the river during the max drawdown?
So the max drawdown, obviously, as you saw on the slide, we'll go through our spring freshets or whatever comes out of the Bureau from a flood flow. We don't know what that'll be until we get into the drawdown there. Once that's gone, Iron Gate Tunnel max flow release will be about 4,000 CFS, and that's when we're at the max reservoir when we start pulling down. And then the max release we are managing to is 6,000 CFS, which is the final breach of the original coffer dam, which is upstream from Iron Gate.
The reason I bring it up is it's a critical safety issue in that when the flow gauge goes at 15 feet or higher at Syed, the state highway goes underwater, cutting off my communities downriver. And I'd like to demand, but apparently at this point I can't demand anything, that you keep the drawdown below that level, that public safety downriver.
And we're aware of that. And that's where the 6,000 CFS value came from, was we're limiting the, we're managing that flow so we don't have downstream impacts.
Okay. Once the reservoirs are removed and your restoration, when you call restoration, you talk about the channel restoration, I think, as part of the project. Restoration to me is, in general, restoration of the river itself. Who, if anybody, is concerned with continued restoration 5 years down the road or more? Is there any thought or any monetary tie with any federal entity to look at the river condition once we're finished?
Thank you for your question. So as Mort originally had the slide up, RES is the restoration contractor, and they're on for 8 years to ensure that the restoration is successful. And at the same time, the federal entity, NOAA, as well as CDFW and multiple other federal entities, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, have earmarked a significant amount of money for the Klamath Basin, as well as the Nature Conservancy. And so the amount of restoration funds going into this basin will probably be pretty substantial. Obviously, there's been a flush of federal money through the infrastructure bill. And so my understanding, there's multiple forums collecting together now, including one that happened at Humboldt in January at Humboldt State, all trying to organize the multiple grant money affiliated with the restoration of the Klamath long term. And I can get that information to you, but there are multiple meetings happening about trying to make sure that the funds that are available to different state and federal agencies are being well coordinated so that they're more efficient and effective in their objectives.
I'm well aware of a lot of that work, and a lot of it is the Klamath emphasis piece, but a lot of it's not associated with the dam removal. I guess the more pointed question I'm asking is, in the 2012 EIS, when there was an old Klamath agreement, there was $250 million in restoration with specific projects within the basin to remedy the issues after dam removal. Is there any such list anymore? or is it just that we don't need to do that work?
I would refer you to, and I can send it to you directly through Chelsea, is the Reservoir Area Management Plan. We call it the RAMP, which lists all of the activities that are going to be undertaken for restoration as far as Spencer Creek above J.C. Boyle, all the way down to Cottonwood Creek.
Mm-hmm. That original list included the Scott, the Shasta, and the Salmon.
Correct.
River as well. And I'd be interested to see what projects specifically would be funded by this larger effort as a result of the effect you're going to have on the river.
So in terms of up in the Scott and the Shasta, specifically up in the basins of them, since the Klamath Dam removal doesn't have direct impacts up into those basins, you are not going to see any projects that are in the ramp that affect those basins. And those were decisions that were made by CDFW's Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA Fisheries with a recognition that when it moved out of Bureau of Reclamation's authority, which obviously is a federal entity that maybe has different funding sources, to the revised settlement agreement and the dam removal entity, it was a recognition that the funds that were available had to be earmarked just for true impacts to the dam itself and the Klamath, the main stem Klamath River. Any impacts that are at the mouth of those will be managed during drawdown itself to make sure there's no impediment for fish to move in and out of the Scott or the Shasta due to any sediment loads. And you'll see that in the ramp also.
Maybe a partial answer to this, but comparing and contrasting history versus now, it was critically important that all that work be done in 2010 and 2012. But I'm really interested in why it's not important anymore.
I'd have to go back to that NEPA document, but one thing that went in place after that was Pacific Corps had to do an interim under the Endangered Species Act. They did what was called a Habitat Conservation Plan, and they had to do interim funding into all of those basins at $500,000 a year to offset the impacts of continued operation until dam removal. So that might have something to do with it. And I know the county partnered on many of those projects.
Okay. Well, I have the specific appendix that I could refer to that came out of the 2012 EIS with the specific projects listed. And at the time, it was hard to get a hold of, but it came out of the Fisheries Task Force back in the early 2000s. As required necessary work to recover salmon after the end.
Understood.
So, question follow-ups here. Once again, kind of jumping around a little bit. For a while there, we broke as the Board of Supervisors convened as an air pollution control district. So thanks for bearing with us. We had to do that to get that done. But a county requirement, certainly it's mandated to us by both the feds and the state, is that we have to monitor, and we're responsible as a county entity and that air pollution control district to monitor air quality. And the dam removal, of course, would be air quality issues, but potential asbestos, and some of the cement that was constructed years ago. So we talked about a little bit here, the Jim Smith, the big guy that was here to talk about the an MOU. Our staffing, well, county staffing is already thin in that department, is in all departments. So we need that MOU to construct and have something in place where the county can fulfill its requirements without taking that staff away from other requirements we have to fulfill as well in monitoring air quality. And this is really a part that we have to fulfill. If we have to spend all our time up there, it takes us away from the other requirements we have to need throughout the county. So I just urge you to either work with Jim Smith and kind of get that along so we can do our part to fulfill that regulatory requirement.
We'll continue to work to advance that.
Thank you. It's absolutely necessary. It's a necessity. Is it true that for any potential cost overruns, the state of California and the state of Oregon would step in? Is it, and then maybe the Pacific Corps, do they step in to cover cost overruns? Is it by third?
That's correct. 2020 MOA provides for those three entities that you mentioned to provide contingency funds in the event that they're necessary. Prior to accessing those contingency funds, we would rely on contingency funds that we have built into the original project budget.
Right.
So we're going into construction with a significant buffer of contingency funds that we will use
to address any unforeseen circumstances that may require us to do a change order with the contractor, for example, okay. or address those kinds of things. But short answer, yes, the three entities have committed to providing additional contingency funds.
If it goes over by $1, it would be 33.33 cents from each.
I don't know how they'll divide that.
All right.
In thirds. Yes.
And then I know this just a concern people have is they'll get to that point and then the use cost is responsible and whether responsibility, whether there'll be accountability for all those parties to you sign your name to it, you have the accountability to do it. And when you talk to common knowledge of people that remodel their house, they always have plans of everything's going to cost a certain way, and they don't necessarily calculate that it's going to go over as much as they anticipate.
Yeah, it's a circumstance we're all painfully aware of, but we've done remodels. The Real Corporation was very thoughtful in selecting a project delivery model that required our contractors to provide either performance guarantees or guaranteed maximum price contracts. So we have done a very detailed job of laying out all the conditions under which the contractor can come forward with change orders. Otherwise, they're bound to guaranteed maximum price contracts and performance measures. And so that provides the Renewal Corporation and frankly, everyone who's watching this project with certain guarantees that the amount of money available will be sufficient to cover the project as we know.
All right. And then one more thing on the Climate Mitigation Fund. I know that there's a separation there. There's a bridge as well, but separation of the entities. Just for the public's questions on that, they're pretty intense, and feelings are hard, of course, and all those sorts of things. But when they calculated out the $5,000 per well, people are kind of doing the math, how much that's going to be, and then $17,000 for the displacement if you need to leave. People are adding up the math, and they're going, it doesn't add up to $25 million. I'm not trying to be sarcastic or out to get you guys, but it doesn't come up to that dollar figure. And so people are wondering, where's this extra money going to be when you add up the $5,000 for all the potential homes and the flooding? And it doesn't add up to the $25 million. So that's something that yourself and the Climate Mitigation Fund find a way to communicate the accountability of how that money's spent, where it's going to, and just answer that to folks.
Understood.
Thank you. And then for the coordination of the water releases, I understand that when the water's released from the dams to draw down and those sorts of things, there'll be a less likelihood to have to take water from Klamath Lake to meet minimum flow requirements because water would be released behind the dams. Is there coordination in place so that water's captured, either sent and used in an upper basin for beneficiaries such as the Pacific Flyway with a refuge, or is there a coordination plan in place? I hate to send extra water down way beyond what's necessary and lose that capture that we could use to benefit this area.
Well, Supervisor Chris, I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but I will offer that the Renewal Corporation is doing very close coordination with the Bureau of Reclamation and the services for purposes of understanding and coordinating operational decisions to accommodate the releases that the Bureau will be doing from Upper Klamath Lake. And so that coordination is close and consistent so that we have an understanding of how the Bureau of Reclamation intends to operate the river. And we're also, as I mentioned, working closely with the services in addition to Reclamation because of the biological opinion requirements that Reclamation has to fulfill in addition to our own biological opinion requirements. So very close coordination on flow management and the continued operations, of course, separate and distinct from dam removal that occur today and will continue after dam removal through the control of Link River Dam and Upper Klamath Lake under the jurisdiction of the Bureau of Reclamation.
Just to summarize, so people know, there's a minimum biological opinion, where flows have to be a certain level at certain times of the year. I would just hate that we send a bunch more water down beyond that could be captured and used in the refuge or used for We have groundwater wells in the Klamath Basin, including my district in Teal Lake. They're going dry. That water can be used to recharge, just not to waste that water. Yeah. I'm done there.
Supervisor Oberlin?
Yeah, two quick questions. You spoke about PacifiCorp shutting down operations of power generation. After that point, once you start dismantling the actual equipment there, I'm assuming PacifiCorp has no more ownership. So at that point, when the dismantling happens of the powerhouses, turbines, all of that kind of stuff, the actual equipment, are you responsible for that? And who's taking all of that, those big, huge turbines and all that kind of stuff apart, and where does it go, and how do you do that? Because that's some gigantic equipment.
Yeah, and to clarify, the Renewal Corporation currently is responsible for the operation of the plants. We have subcontracted PacifiCorp and their operators to continue running them up until power termination occurs. So the Renewal Corporation and our contractors will dismantle the powerhouses and pretty much in a reverse order of the way they were put together. So we'll basically pull the turbines out, we'll pull the generators out, pull the turbines out, take out all the piping, and all that will be recycled. So all the metals will go off site, so that all that material will be taken off site and basically recycled, all the copper wire that comes out, all that stuff. And some of that equipment will be, some of it PacifiCorp can use at other plants, so they'll take some of that, not a lot, but like the transformers will be used someplace else, so we'll provide that to PacifiCorp, and then they'll transport that off to their yard and use that at another location.
So is that still their equipment?
The part that salvage is theirs, the way the agreements are written up, there's a salvage agreement between Renewal Corporation and PacifiCorp, where we drew that line, and they said, this is the stuff we want to keep, so they'll take ownership of that when we do the final power termination and shut the plants down. And then they're responsible for handling that and moving it off-site. And then everything that's left is our responsibility. So we'll take all the oil out, dispose of that, all those kind of things.
Okay. Well, then that... So then all the oil has to be tested, PCBs, blah, 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 that kind of...
Correct. There's a whole process we'll go through, hazardous materials handling, all of that will be done as we dismantle the powerhouse.
Okay. And then that leads me into my next question of big trucks, heavy equipment, roads. So we have an MOU in place.
Yeah, and that's what we've been working with Chelsea and Elizabeth and Tom on, is basically those heavy load permits and the bridges and all those kind of things. And then when we pull that equipment out, we'll be breaking it down into as small loads as we can, you know, so we can basically stay within the road guidelines.
Okay. And the bridges been brought up to the right standards to carry those heavy loads? I know that there were some corrections that had to be made to those bridges.
So there are two bridges, Fall Creek and Dry Creek, and there's temporary strengthening systems that were put in. We met with the county. They had concerns. We went back, did some additional modifications to those. The design engineer working under Kiewit came out and inspected those, and there'll be a letter expecting it any day from that design engineer that goes to the county with the additional support data that the county requested, along with that certification that those bridges meet the state standards for those that were anticipated. And that temporary strengthening will stay in until the project's done. It'll be monitored all the way through the construction, so make sure it stays compliant, and then we'll pull it out when we're done.
And then any degradation of the roads because of all this heavy lifting that's being done, hopefully you're responsible for taking care of.
So the MOU that was put together with the county basically addresses the existing condition and future condition repairs. So we have a meeting on that here coming up to just get more into the weeds on the MOU. So there's an MOU put in place up front that was basically put together to address those issues.
Right. It is one of the only legacies we have to leave the people out there, and it would be nice if those roads could be better than what they are currently, and this project is going to basically ruin the roads. So one of the only things we have.
We understand the concern.
And because we understand the concern, the Renewal Corporation has committed to providing substantial funding to address degradation of road conditions, and we're working through some clarification of roles and responsibilities, and with the county's input and direction, making determinations about when it's best spend the funding that is available for improvements to the roads. We will ensure that there are sufficient funds and division of roles and responsibilities to address any problems that occur during the project, and retain sufficient funds at the back end to do improvements as we leave the construction site.
Public safety is huge, not only for your employees, but for the public as well.
And we take that responsibility for public safety very seriously.
Thank you.
Office location, is there one in Siskiyou?
We don't have a brick and mortar office location in Siskiyou, but we do have space at the construction site. So our staff are available in Siskiyou County on a regular basis for that purpose.
Will the recreation areas that are closing for public safety after dam removal, will they be reopened?
Well, all of the sites that are scheduled for closure in May are recreation facilities associated with the presence of the reservoirs. So they will no longer serve any purpose, and they will be fully decommissioned. We are in the process of working with the recreation community and the states and federal agencies for purposes of implementing a post-dam removal recreation plan. That involves the siting and the design and the construction of a number of new river-based recreation facilities, including sites for fishing, for rafting and other water-based activities. There are trails and a whole host of other recreational amenities to give the public and recreational users access to the river at specific locations after dam removal.
So the current recreational areas are going to be closed in May?
That's correct. The ones that were listed on the slide
this year, though.
That's correct. Yes, this coming month.
And then with regard to, you know, I've heard, I think Diane say that everything is under FERC jurisdiction. So I guess, I don't know what you can do about this, but the flood... plain maps are problematic. And I don't know if this board can direct staff to commit to a letter from this board at our potentially our next meeting or the meeting thereafter that identifies this problem with the floodplain, and that FERC may need to weigh in on this with regard to getting it done sooner than later. Yesterday, because of the building that's trying to take place and the building that will take place after, if in fact FERC has that jurisdiction.
Yeah, understand. And Supervisor Kopsa, thank you for bringing that issue back to the forefront. It was a hot topic today, and I appreciate the discussion. So, as was referenced, the Renewal Corporation has been relying on previous floodplain mapping and modeling that was done to identify where we would expect the new 100-year floodplain to be. But again, it's speculation and modeling. The reason that FEMA is not currently engaged for purposes of updating the flood information system for flood insurance purposes is that there is no concrete knowledge of where the Klamath River will actually be after dam removal through the hydroelectric reach, and even downstream of the hydroelectric reach, because of the uncertainty around what the conditions are going to be. There's no real point and purpose in identifying a new floodplain. There would be no ability today to model what a new 100-year floodplain is going to look like through the hydroelectric reach. So the normal process, and the process that will be followed after dam removal, is that surveying will be done and letters of map revision will be submitted to FEMA,
who will confirm modeling and will make determinations about where the new 100-year floodplain should be delineated. That's the process that will be done, and the rationale for why that work can't be done today. The conditions are simply not known today to identify where the floodplain would be, modeled or otherwise.
I guess I'll say understood, but the problem that we have is the McKinney Fire, a lot of that rebuild can't occur without that floodplain map. And that's even before dam removal. Nobody's going to be able to wait 2 or 3 years for that ability. And I'm not putting that on you. I'm just saying that that's a consideration that FERC has to take on and provide a new order or direction on how that's going to work, because the residents aren't going to be able to wait that long.
Yeah, understood. And the Renewal Corporation would be happy to engage in a conversation with staff and with the board in the future, as might be helpful to create more certainty around that question.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
One last question that hasn't been asked today. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. But I think you figured out I'm not much on trust without verifying. Regarding fire, I've looked at your fire plan. Quite frankly, my personal assessment is that was a political decision at a much higher level. What I'm concerned about and what I want to know is, in real time, how are you coordinating with the Interagency Command Center here in Wairika regarding fire this summer and fire next summer due to access points that may not be accessible and drawdowns that may not be predictable for them? Because I don't know if you know or not, but there's a canned response for specific areas that comes out of the dispatch center to use specific places for initial attack. And we don't have time to call on the phone and ask what the heck is going on without some principal point of contact locally that you're working with almost on a daily basis.
Well, I'm going to address the general question about the fire plan, and then I'm going to ask Moore to speak specifically to the question about interagency command center and coordination with the Renewal Corporation and the dam removal project. That fire management plan was predicated on an awareness and an acceptance that the loss of the reservoirs is a direct impact on an important water supply for firefighting purposes.
Believe me, I know. It's several.
I'm not telling you something you don't already know, Supervisor, with respect. But the coordination and collaboration that went into the development of the fire plan drew directly from the experience and input and guidance from professional firefighting organizations.
At the state level.
At the state level and at the local level. And we are investing a significant amount of money to address the loss of the reservoirs. We've currently delivered water tenders and other firefighting equipment. There's additional firefighting equipment that will be delivered to address fuels management, as well as direct water supply infrastructure and ability for fire responders to have access to wet water. In addition to that, at the direction of the firefighting agencies, we're working with them for purposes of making improvements to the monitoring and detection network. There's a distinct desire on the part of those agencies to bring forward, move to the front end of response, the ability to do early warning and detection. And so we're doing technology installations that will improve the early detection and early warning system so that firefighters have a jump start on responding to incidents. Let me ask Mark to address specifically your question about the coordination for addressing fires this summer and next year.
So the coordination to date, we just moved to the site, as you heard, late February, first part of March. So the equipment that's required by our contractors is the first step to make sure we have all that equipment. It's the water trucks, all the fire equipment specific to their actions. The next step will be to start doing the coordination with local resources and state resources, which will start here in May. Keep in mind the reservoirs are still available for firefighting this year. We are constructing the new fire access ramps, dry hydrant structures this fall, and that will support once the reservoirs are out as we go into next year, we start the drawdown. So a lot of the activities you're talking about are starting now and will be coordinated as we move forward and head into the fire season here in May.
So are you part of the daily assessment?
I am not, but we have
someone?
So yes, we have teams that will be in part of that.
They're working directly with?
And I can't, I'll come back to you with the specifics on that. I don't have that knowledge off the tip of my fingers at this point.
I appreciate that, because most of what I heard doesn't answer any of my questions. So.
No, I understand what you're asking for, okay. And I'll bring that information back for you.
Thank you.
Brandon?
I think that I've asked my question.
I'm going around one more time. No complaints. I didn't get to answer a question.
You know, there's lots of questions and unknowns. I appreciate the team coming forward.
I think we're going to wrap it up really quickly. Yeah. Is that what you're asking?
No. I've got something to comment on.
Go ahead.
Comment just for the record that yesterday the Board of Supervisors were forwarded two letters. They look like they're both from the Klamath River Renewal Corporation that have to do with the dam removal, early closure of recreation sites, as well as I believe it's the docks removal, and it's out there. If the public wants any of those copies, they're here as well. So I just wanted to get that on the record.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my only comment was coming here before us is a positive thing. Having that dialogue face to face, or as you can see, this is an important conversation. It's appreciated you came before us, but having that face to face and being engaged in this is can be beneficial.
Thank you for that, Supervisor Chris. And again, we genuinely appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
Supervisor Robert?
I just want to go back to what Supervisor Hout was saying about fire suppression. I was at the fire chief's meeting the other day, and they're in receipt of a number of the vehicles that you have helped fund, and they're still working on getting a couple of them retrofitted, and are very happy with what they've received at this point. And there was some discussion about where some of those dry hydrants are going to be placed and how that coordination is going to work. So I do know that that is well-received equipment and that there is some conversation about how that's going to be used up around that area. So that's good forward thinking, not probably enough, but at least it's there. So that is a step in the right direction, and I do appreciate that, and so does the fire world.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Kopsa.
Mitigation fund, I would highly encourage you to tell the administrators to be at one of these meetings and to quit denying showing up. I think they need to be transparent as well. It is public money, and our residents are being affected. So I highly encourage you to get them at our next meeting here. This is more towards staff. I'd like to get the financial disclosures on the mitigation fund and the financial disclosures as the Renewal Corporation has indicated that are online, but I think that's something that we need to get and post on our website as well, so John Q. Public sees how their dollars are being spent down. And then I would entertain some type of a letter to FERC with regard to the floodplain mapping. That's a crucial piece to what's going on here, and I think we all need to work together to get that accomplished sooner than later. I'll leave it at that.
Supervisor Hout?
No, not for you. This is for staff, too. What I'd like to see, I guess, is maybe community development come in and give us an update on the worker camp. How's that going? What are the numbers that are going to be housed, water sources, et cetera, et cetera?
One last bite at the apple.
Thank you, but I'm going to show discretion here. There's lots of things to bring up, lots of things to say. This is a huge issue for a lot of people, life-altering. And so we'll keep engaged, but
yes,
out there.
Michael?
The county and the county's residents just need to be made whole.
Anything else?
Had enough.
I'll say one thing, because you saw me yakking away at this whole meeting. There was a specific reason why I requested a special meeting this year, particularly what happened. That was my thought and my idea, particularly being the board chair. You can see how much time it takes. I am going to ask that you're going to have to come back. This isn't a one-off type thing. So we have special meetings every month, and I think as warranted, you're going to need to come back and face the heavy music that you're going to get continuing to this project's done. So with that, I want to thank you for showing up and being forthright with the answers.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Supervisor. We stand ready to come back before you at your convenience.
Good. Meeting adjourned.